I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order. The time is now 1:32 on Tuesday, February 17th, here in room 124. Members present include Representative St. Clair, Representative Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Co-Chair Eichheit, and myself, Co-Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business, and please take this time to silence your cell phones for the meeting. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records and Susan Quigley from the Juno LIO for staffing our committee today. Our committee aides are Griffin Sukeo and Meredith Trainer. Thank you all for your help. On today's agenda, we are bringing back our presentation from the Department of Transportation on operating changes or on advanced construction. We also have an updated presentation there, as well as a discussion about the department's current reorganization efforts, which we just began discussion of in the subcommittee meeting. I'd like to thank Commissioner Anderson for joining us and Director Pannone, and welcome you both to the House Transportation Committee. If you'd like to come on up and put yourselves on the record, we can go ahead and start this presentation.
Okay. Thank you for having us here today. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Today we're going to go through two topics. One is on department reorg, and then the other one is on advanced construction. Recognizing that we went through some of this material in budget committee, I will move fairly quickly through the slides, but definitely want to save the time for any questions or comments that folks may have. So, with that, I'll just jump right into it. Co-Chair Carrick.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, so we'll start out with just the DOT operating vision. I mean, this is really, we have our mission, keep Alaska moving. We have our core values at DOT, integrity, excellence, respect, and safety. Our vision is to be modern, resilient, and agile, both as an organization, but also our transportation system. And then, of course, our statutory purpose. And so as we go through and work through any changes to our organization and how we work, these are the things we keep in mind as we go forward. There's been a lot of discussion, and we've had some good discussions in past hearings about why change is required. This is a slide about internal challenges, and really these are some of the things. We're not doing this in a vacuum. We hear from folks. I mean, AGC has provided us letters. The Association of General Contractors in Alaska, also the Association of Engineering Consultants, the national, they have an Alaska branch too. They've been into our offices and talked to us about some of their challenges. And then hearing from local governments, municipalities, all of those types of folks, we're constantly listening and trying to figure out ways that we can do better. And we recognize we have a lot of really good people that are working really hard, and so our role here is to really try to see if there's ways that we can improve things. One of these things is inconsistent regional practices. And this is brought up from a lot of different entities. Some of the examples of this and where we want to have more consistency on the capital program, the application of material specifications. If you were to go to the three different regions, you would see different approaches to that. Sometimes those are, take into account the geography or the climate or those types of things. Other times, some folks had really good ideas, and we're just looking to get those passed along. Contract administration practices, if you were to go to the three different regions, you'll see different ways that contracts are administered, whether it's how they're resourced, the timing of things, just the interpretation of different statutes or regulations as well. And so that's been another piece that we're looking at. Payment processes, of course, how people get paid, contractors get paid, is always a focus, and how that is done. We've done a lot to get everyone on the same page as that. We have some new modern tools with AshtoWare and some of these platforms that helps us out there. But that's another piece of this, is get everybody on the same page. So when you're a contractor and you're doing business with DOT, the expectation is you get paid in a certain amount of time, and it doesn't change, and how you get paid doesn't change with the regions. So what we have heard from contractors is when we have different standards and approvals and ways we do things in different regions, they actually may adjust the way they bid a project based on how well they think and how they work with a certain region, and how risks are evaluated. So this is one piece for an internal challenge that, you know, we're looking to improve on with our proposal. Another one is just this variability in annual program delivery. We all know that shifts in project timing and annual construction volume, it makes it pretty difficult for industry to plan at times. And so we need to have that more holistic look across the state and making sure we're we have that pipeline that not only addresses the infrastructure needs, it also addresses, you know, where our contractors are working and how they allocate work as well, because we know when things like disasters strike, it's really important that they're available. We, you know, we have a healthy contracting community. So looking at that. Also, variation in maintenance standards across regions. We have had folks come to us and say, man, when you cross a certain milepost on the Parks Highway, the maintenance changes. And we've had discussions, I think, in this committee a bit about, or in the budget committee about that subcommittee. So that you'll also, when you drive throughout the state, you may see different ways that waysides are marked or different types of markings for passing lanes. And sometimes those are just things that are happening because of evolution of standards and things, and some regions are moving quicker in that direction. Not that there's anything wrong with how they're done, they just look different. And we really want it to look the same across our state when it comes to like those important things like highway signage and those types of things. We heard about waysides earlier in subcommittee. We talked about waysides, a similar thing, you know, that we're managing waysides similarly across the state. And then also, you know, we've heard a lot about how we engage with local communities, our tribal engagement practices, and we've done a lot over the past couple of years to really become more consistent with that. And we believe that this change in structure will improve, will continue down that path. It really is just strengthening how we've done that, and we'll talk more about that here later as well.
And I think we have a couple questions here. Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the co-chair to Commissioner Ryan. You know, as I look at this, you know, I see the internal challenges, especially the top two. I'm wondering if a lot of these concerns, these internal challenges, couldn't be solved by just having standard operating procedures. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, when I worked for the Mat-Su Borough as a planner, we had many departments. But we had standard operating procedures, so each department wasn't acting like a lone actor, if you would. There was consistency, and folks knew what they were dealing with regardless of the department with how we did things through our standard operating procedures. So isn't that a simpler model to achieve some of these internal challenge goals that you mentioned?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick to Co-Chair Eichheit. Absolutely, standard operating procedures. So we do have a chief engineer who sets standards across the state. We have guidance memos, you know, we'll have chief engineer's directives, we'll have all of those types of things. But how those things get interpreted can be differently depending on, you know, who's in the seat. And what we're seeing is that can be, you know, that can change depending on, you know, what your current priorities are, how your view is on things. So I definitely agree. It just, we're seeing that you have to have that constant leadership push to make sure that the people that are applying the standards are reporting to the same person.
Follow up. And Commissioner, you've been here so often, I'm now calling you by your first name. So my apologies, sir. Commissioner Anderson.
I put myself in the queue as well, Commissioner, and I think you sort of were getting at this in your last response, but you had mentioned, you know, some inconsistencies in delivery, like vegetation clearing when you'd cross boundaries from one region to another, or ability to capture dollars for different projects. Is there any one region that needs more support or is having consistent challenges meeting the standard set by another region? And I don't mean that to try to throw any region under the bus. I have a follow-up question to that, but just to start there.
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick, it's a great question. You know, we're having conversations with some of our maintenance team leaders last week, And, you know, one of the things on the maintenance side, up north, they actually have an engineering team that's integrated with their maintenance teams. And that provides them a lot of benefit. That was never implemented in the central region or the South Coast region. And we're actually talking about that and how we can do that now. The key there is they're able to have folks to really look at some of these challenges with funding, what can fit in some of these federal programs to really leverage them, whereas other regions haven't had that focus yet. And so that absolutely is a part of this. Yeah.
And I guess as a thank you for that, and as a follow-up, if there's that, you know, if that's a good example of something Northern Region is doing well, does it not make sense to try to apply that to Central Region and South Coast Region, and similarly where those regions have certain efficiencies that they've achieved to implement those in other regions as opposed to a full consolidation of the regions?
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of the goal of having a leadership position that oversees a functional aspect like maintenance and operations is they're going to be able to see that success and very directly apply it in other areas. That's the piece we're missing right now. Right now, when you have three different centralized areas, one in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, and then centralized in Juneau, you've got to get through a different process to get that implemented. So the idea is, if the resource control is in one place, you know, for the functional piece, that allows resources to move more quickly amongst those execution areas.
Okay, I think I have some more questions on this, just philosophically about how to work this, but I'll save it for right now. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Co-Chair Carrick. So, Commissioner, through the chair, co-chair, it seems to me that this is the DOT trying to shrink government a little bit, right? I mean, save some money. So, mm-hmm. Seems that the leadership, you're consolidating the leadership at the top, and you're, spreading what resources you have where they belong, which is in maintenance. Would that be sort of a fair characterization? And if so, do you expect it to save money, or is it just going to basically be able to use the money that we kind of took from your department last year and find better ways to improve it, like better roads and stuff?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative McCabe. We're absolutely trying to reduce, our footprint, just because we recognize the fiscal challenges right now, and we don't foresee them improving for the future. So we believe, you know, these changes not only, you know, takes care of things now, but also sets us up for the future. I think, yeah, that's a big focus for us. We are trying to, if you look at our position deletion list, we have leadership positions, we have management positions across the board. You know, we're really trying to look holistically at this and how we can do that while continuing to deliver the same service or better to the people of Alaska.
Follow up. So I think what I hear you saying, and I'm just kind of highlighting this for people that are watching, is we sort of have a choice sometimes in government. We can provide jobs for a bunch of people, or we can use the money that would pay those people to provide better roads and better maintenance and better equipment maintenance. And that's probably more of a statement than a question, but would you kind of agree that that's where you're going to shift your money and your focus, is actually doing the maintenance instead of just paying extra people for jobs?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative McCabe. I mean, that is our, focusing on frontline services is absolutely one of our strategies. When you look at our reduction proposals, as we've kind of talked about before, we had choices to make this year. One was to close maintenance camps. The other one was to look at this kind of restructurability and kind of realign things, you know, and looking at ways of working and modernization and seeing if, you know, we can't make it work that way. And we believe we can and keep the level of service for Alaskans.
Thanks.
And Representative McCabe, I I think last I checked, people have to perform maintenance, so I'm a little confused about your question.
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to answer, you don't need three or four different chiefs to do what one chief can do. So if you're consolidating your leadership in the state, and I think this is what we're doing, and you're saving money on leadership or administration, then you can put the maintenance people, you can put the money where it belongs, which is in the man camps. So we have a choice. We can pay three or four different leaders, or we can keep man camps open.
It was somewhat rhetorical, but I appreciate the dialogue anyway. Let's continue on our slides, and then we have a lot of slides today, so I might ask for members to hold questions for a few slides, and then we can pause in a few, just to give the commissioner time to speak.
Okay. Yeah, and I will move quickly. So for the record, Ryan Anderson, this next slide is really about the external pressures. And, of course, everybody knows Alaska's fiscal environment is challenging right now, and it absolutely applies a lot of pressure to us as a department and making sure we're, you know, doing the best we can with resources available. Cost escalation, inflationary pressures, those have been a very significant factor over the past few years. And so we're constantly trying to absorb what we can, find new ways of doing things to save where we can and moving forward that way. This geographic exposure and emergency response demands, I mean, absolutely, over the past few years, DOT has been responding to an enormous amount of a significant number of events, including the Typhoon Heilong. And that absolutely, you know, what we're trying to do is build a structure where we can use the entirety of our agency when we have to resource those events and make sure we can be responsive to communities across the state. And then we do have this complex federal funding and compliance requirements where in the past, when it was mostly formula funds and we could work through those things, we didn't have to do so much in terms of strategizing and trying to make sure that the projects were correct for the funding types, the eligibilities were worked out. And so really having that broader look across on the capital program so we know the projects are being scoped and correctly and whatnot is really important for us right now to make sure that our funding and compliance requirements are met on that front as well. Okay, and then this is just a quick slide. As we go forward, you know, we set guiding principles, so we kind of keep double-checking ourselves as we work through organizational change, modern service delivery, that frontline focus like we've talked about, making sure that I mean, that is a goal for us to make sure that the folks doing the work on the front lines, that we're getting the support there. This resilience through core capability that when things come up that we can support the, you know, Alaska and whatever the needs are, transportation-wise, disaster-wise, or whatnot. Having this future-ready organization, we absolutely acknowledge that the world is changing quickly technology-wise. We've built the Division of Modernization and Innovation office, and you know we continue to be thinking in those terms, and then just you know make sure we have safety, reliability, and stewardship as a topic, you know, as a primary focus, guiding principle as we work through things. So this is the structure piece, and I, you know, we've gone through this. That we have strategic assets, which you know we've already done. That's the on the left side of our graphic there. Alaska International Airport System, Alaska Marine Highway System, Statewide Equipment Fleet, Division of Facilities, Measurement Standards, and Commercial Vehicle Compliance. They all have individual directors. You know, they all have different ways that they're funded. Some, you know, many accrue revenue. It just, you know, they're a different kind of asset for DOT. And then on the right, we have cross-functional teams, and these we've already built. Program management administration, data modernization, innovation. We are strengthening the Highway Safety Office with this effort, adding more resource there. Program development, project management office has been a continuing work product for us. The Alaska Trails and Local Access Systems, that's the new development with the transfer of the Recreational Trails Program to DOT, so we can really focus on all those important winter trails and winter roads, as well as our trail system across Alaska. And then communications, procurement, and civil rights as well, those important things. They work across our state, across all our divisions already. So then the piece becomes, you know, looking at infrastructure development and maintenance and operations. And the change here isn't to break up the regions. I mean, we continue to have a northern, central, and south coast region. It's really adding that functional leadership. So the pre-construction engineers, the construction engineers that all work on capital programs report to an infrastructure development director. And those all are regional-focused people. And then maintenance and operations. There's the regional-focused folks that report to a maintenance and operations director that really heads up the state maintenance and operations. Okay, and then this is just a quick slide. I won't spend too much time on this. It just really says to clarify what's changing and what's not. On the maintenance and operations side, there'll be a single statewide maintenance and operations director. Clear authority between director and district superintendents. And, of course, the superintendents are those folks that each one of these colored blocks on our map is an individual district. And so you can kind of see how there's DOT districts, but then there's also regions. And so those boundaries don't change. Aligned regional support services, that's one thing we're looking at is supporting support services. In the past, we're focused on regional support service, so they would work through both maintenance operations and the capital program. Now what we would do is we'd have support services that would be focused on maintenance and operations and support services that are focused on capital projects. What's not changing is geographic district boundaries, district level authority and local decision making, and frontline staffing and our deployment models.
Commissioner, we have a question from Representative Mina.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the Co-Chair, to Commissioner Anderson. So I understand you're maintaining your geographic districts and the superintendents at those districts. We're centralizing the functions. Are you eliminating the regional offices?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Mina. Yeah, thanks for that question. No. So we're not, where people are right now doesn't change. There may be some, on the M&O side, there won't be any changes that anyone's even talked about on that front. On the capital side, there has been some discussions about having teams get more integrated in communities, and so we're working through that. But that isn't a regional district change. That's just more internal, having some teams out, you know, working in different areas.
Follow up. Thank you. Through the co-chair to Commissioner Anderson, so I just want to make sure that we're complying with statute. So I was looking at AS 44-42-040. The commissioner shall establish regions within the state. The functions of the department within each region shall be performed to the maximum extent feasible through a regional office. Each regional office shall be directed by a regional transportation and public facilities director appointed by the commissioner. So with the centralization of these functions, do these regional offices still have a transportation and public facilities director appointed by the commissioner?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Mina. Yeah, the appointments come on the functional level, so there's still the functional director of the district offices. And so that's how that piece is structured to work. And then we have the engineers, the E5s at each district, at each for the capital improvement levels, you know, that work in each region that still oversee the execution of all the operations in the region.
A follow-up. Thank you. Through the co-chair. So those positions, the functional director and the other position, those are the same as a regional transportation and public facilities director?
So, yeah, through the co-chair Carrick, Representative Mina, the functional directors are directors. That's correct. I mean, it's a director position.
Just one last follow-up. Through the co-chair, is there anything that we would need to change in statute, or could you talk more about just the legality and the authority that you have to reorganize the department?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Mina. We have discussed these changes with our legal department. At this time, we're not recognizing any statute changes that need to be had for this change. We're fully expecting to make any changes in compliance with the statute. I mean, that's absolutely our intent here. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Good afternoon, Commissioner. Nice to see you. I just have a question, and maybe it was already addressed and I missed it, but I guess I would have a little concern, and maybe needlessly, with the reorganization. I've seen in the past few years where one individual is wearing several hats, and it's almost a situation where nothing's getting done because a person is spread so thin that they just can't possibly be responsible for any one of their jobs, much less all of them that have been assigned to them. So how is this reorganization playing into that pre-existing situation?
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Stutes, and yeah, absolutely. We have folks that, in a lot of fronts, are wearing a lot of hats to meet the needs of the day. The idea here is what we've recognized when we're seeking a regional director that is has to take on capital program, operations, property management. I mean, all those things that happen in a geographic region. It's very difficult to find a person that has that experience, and so that's been a challenge for us. We believe that if to find someone who is very experienced in maintenance and operations, that those folks are in Alaska, and they may be excited about, you know, this opportunity to work across the state. I mean, it's a great state, a lot of good opportunities for good experiences, and the same on the capital side. The capital programs take a certain set of expertise and experience and knowledge. To have a director that is focused on that, I believe we'll have better luck, finding those folks that are excited about that. As you know, where we're trying to find these folks that try to take on dual or even triple roles on that front. So that's the thought behind this.
Thank you.
Commissioner, I also had a question here. On the previous slide, it says after this key structural shift, we'll have the functions will own what decisions are made, where regions focus on where and how work is delivered. I think one of the primary concerns I have with the potential for reorganization is that you would have this consolidation of the overarching what decisions are made positions into Anchorage, and that South Coast and Northern Region would sort of be downstream of the big picture decision making. If we're organized by function as opposed to region, that could lead to real serious setbacks for regions that are not potentially represented in the higher echelons of leadership. So what can you say to, you know, me and, you know, Northern Region and South Coast Region to kind of alleviate this concern about consolidation of leadership?
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick, appreciate that question. I think from my experience, what really has been driving performance in a region isn't necessarily the leadership of it's very critical. It's the teams within that division that really are driving the performance. I think if the concern is about how things are prioritized across the state, that's a fair concern. I mean, right now, I hear it from others that aren't in Anchorage, aren't in Juneau, aren't in Fairbanks, that, you know, if you live in the outlying areas, maybe it's the West Coast and Nome or some other areas that maybe you're already not getting prioritized. So that's something I think we have to tackle through other avenues. And, you know, we're working on performance planning and different ways to look at projects on that front. I think on the maintenance front, I honestly think that having the more holistic view across the state of how resources are allocated and how the performance is, you know, there's the one challenge right now. I would love to have a performance report for all of you to see how we're doing with some metrics on snow removal, metrics on pothole, filling the roads, getting repaved or whatever it is that we're doing that is of interest. But as a statewide, in the past, we've gone down those paths. It's tough when it's region by region because people are looking at things differently. They're reporting on things differently. But the idea is that you would have that more bigger picture as a legislator of DOT's performance. So that would be a big part of it.
I guess Commissioner, as a follow-up, can you give me an example of post-consolidation, what this could look like if you had a project for, if you had a project for South Coast Region, say? If you had a project to work on lighting and pedestrian safety in Kodiak, as an example. Mm-hmm. Tell me, walk me through how, with this consolidated structure, at what point the decision to prioritize that project would be made and how that would function. Yeah. And you could use a different theoretical example if you want to.
Well, I'm co-chair Carrick. I mean, Kodiak's always a good example for this committee. we could talk about the cool light that we put in, but okay. Not a lot changes. So when a project, let's say there's there are some good projects that are advertising, maybe even this month, they might have.
It just started.
That's to redo a big portion of Rezanov.
And walk across the street. We got the new.
Yep. Yep. And so, but that all is happening at the the pre-construction engineer level and the construction engineer level. These are E5s, Range 27s. They're really managing that project delivery within the region, the resource allocation, how we're applying the engineers and what their priorities are, how the priorities of the environmental analysts would be. The right-of-way folks is a big focus, the utilities people. Those are critical path drivers. That all happens at that level. I mean, a director is typically the person where if there's the construction contracting, ultimately the final signature on a construction contract is at the director level. If there are disputes, like there's questions about prioritization, yeah, they'll elevate those. Like, hey, I don't have enough resources to do all these projects at once. Which one, you know, should I work on or should I apply resources? And there's discussions about contracting and all those types of things. So they really serve more as that purpose rather than a day-to-day operational push. That's the piece. So from that front, you know, for ongoing projects, I think it gets better because you have one person that's overlooking the resources and recognizing, oh man, Anchorage has a lot of projects right now. It's pretty tough. Maybe there's some extra capacity in Fairbanks that could help Anchorage, and we're actually doing that right now. Same with South Coast, and we're shifting resources. So it's not, So we just do a better job using the totality of our resources there.
Okay, thank you for that, Representative Stutes, and then let's go through some more slides.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will make this quick just because I'm a little confused. So, will you still have an area director, like a South Coast director, like Chris Goings, isn't he South Coast?
Mm-hmm.
Will he still remain the South Coast guy?
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Stutes. So what we would do is take that position and make that an infrastructure development director, and so they would oversee all the regions on that front.
We don't like that. We want to keep Mr. Goings with just South Coast.
Through Co-Chair, Representative Stutes, he's doing a phenomenal job. There's no doubt, and I absolutely recognize that. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a good thing the DOT doesn't work for us. 60 of us stay, and we like this person.
Do.
No, they don't.
So
the executive branch.
We're going to move on. and Commissioner, I think you had gone through slide 7, so if we could go to slide 8.
Okay, thank you. And for the record, Ryan Anderson. So this is infrastructure development, the other piece where all our capital programs happen. And as you can see, so we still have the regions, but we would have a single statewide infrastructure development director. But really, you have more aligned pre-construction and construction leadership. And so by kind of building this team structure, those E5s, those pre-construction engineers, they would all be a part of the same team. They're not separated by a boundary. They're really, I mean, they still replace, the, they still... work in their respective boundaries, but they are actually responsible to a single person. And so that gives them consistent direction on how they should work through design standards, those types of things, allocating resources, et cetera. We also, the life cycle authority and accountability, I mean, we do believe that having that consistent direction improves decision-making, from early development through construction delivery. I mean, there's a lot of cool, there's a lot of really good, interesting ways. I found out when I was up in Fairbanks a few weeks ago, they were talking about some ways that they're doing preventative maintenance projects now, and they can get one out in a year. That's something we need to share, you know? So there's things like that where I think you'd see a lot more of those types of good, positive things happening. That kind of goes into the statewide teaming and resource sharing. And then just this consistent statewide business practices. I know we had an issue not too long ago where utility companies approached us and said, hey, we're being required to waive certain rights in one region but not another. And it was based on an interpretation of a statute. And so those types of things we don't want happening because it was affecting how the utility companies could do business. And so things like that, we want to get those cleaned up. And we feel like this change helps with that. What's not changing is the regional boundaries and that those local teams that are there delivering the projects, the local knowledge and relationships. We think we can do better on that. And then federal oversight and compliance. There's still a role there where, you know, they work through our existing delegations and whatnot.
Commissioner, I know I said we would go through a couple of slides, but I'm still stuck on this. You have on here statewide teaming and resource sharing and a couple other things too, but what prevents us from having flexible use of expertise and specialized resources across regions right now? In other words, what does this functionally change that we're not, that DOT is not able to do right now in terms of allowing flexible use of resources?
Yeah, Co-Chair Carrick, that's an excellent question. How it works, and we are doing it right now, but how it works is the commissioner or deputy commissioner are getting involved in making sure that those things are happening because a single director within a regional geography doesn't have the authority to use from another region. And so what we're looking for here is that person that sees across the state where the resources are and can very quickly say, you know, we've got some capacity here. How about, you know, working on some of these things? And that's so we're doing it. We did it on Typhoon. We had everybody on the Typhoon. We had folks from Fairbanks, South Coast, I mean, Northern, out in the Western District. I mean, everybody was doing it there. We have folks right now from Fairbanks working on MATSU projects, getting them out the door. And we're just looking for that capacity and making those things happen. So, yeah, we're absolutely doing it. This just kind of institutionalizes what we're doing at this point.
Please continue.
For the record, Don Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration. So this slide outlines the fiscal context for the reorganization. We've talked in some of our budget subcommittees about the $5.2 million reduction we took in the current year. And as we've discussed in this meeting, DOT took a hard look at which programs we had and which programs we want to preserve and where we wanted to have that cut be impacted. And so this is largely about preserving and having those dollars keep road maintenance and keep our frontline staff working and looking at our administrative and other functions and looking at efficiencies there. The strategic budget response is aligning a lot of what we've already done in the current year to adapt to that. And it's also aligning the organization with the structure of the budget. If you look at our budget, we have large sections. We have highways and aviation and then broken down into regions. We also have the infrastructure appropriation then broken down into regions. So our organization is going to reflect the way it's budgeted. We'll still have those regions. The budget is structured by function, and our organization will match that and follow the budget appropriately. Moving to slide 10, another part of our reorganization is taking some functions from the Department of Administration, specifically the payroll function. We have public safety employees, we have labor, trades, and craft employees, and some complex payroll issues. We have a lot of travel. And so in bringing these employees back, we are able to embed them directly within the department, not have a middleman or a relay or a ticket system that goes over to a different department in order to resolve issues. We can focus on priorities for any pay issues and new collective bargaining implementations. also taking on account services and payables. We'll be able to integrate those directly to support our staff without, again, an intermediary ticket system that goes over to another department. Slide 11 outlines the kind of the main scope of the impact in the governor's proposed budget. This impact for position deletion is 23 total positions. Five of these positions are exempt. Four of these are supervisory. So it's a lot of consolidating where decisions by function and flattening the organization structure. The workforce impact of DOT, we have over 3,400 positions, so it's less than 1%, and most of those changes are really at the top, highest functional level, not in below where we still have regional and district aligned positions.
And Director Pannone, we have a question. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I don't know that it's so much a question as it is a concern and a comment. And you say that most of these are the higher level positions that are being eliminated, and that really gives me pause based on some of the past history. Just talking about the debacle with STIP, that's going to haunt you guys for a while, unfortunately. I know that you're trying to overcome it, and I think we all appreciate it and can see the improvements you've made. But to see all of these higher positions, people with the history and the experience, and having their positions eliminated, at least that's what I'm hearing, really is of concern to me.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, the department won a national award for our STIP just this last fall, and we were happy to see those improvements in the resolution on how we're doing that. And turnover is a natural part of any organization. Those positions that we are not separating directly any of our leadership, some of these positions, such as a deputy commissioner, have been vacant over a year, and we're able to reprioritize whether or not we're going to have funding for those positions or focus on the front lines, maintenance, and operations. And so that's a fiscal decision that we've had to make.
Appreciate that. Thank
you. Representative McCabe?
Thanks. So I'm curious, is this who put this together? Is this like TQM kind of stuff, or is this just an internal? Are you using an external consultant to kind of manage this or to put it together?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, with the commissioner and our deputy commissioner and most of our directors went through our programs, evaluated where responsibilities had moved, and we had legacy responsibilities where we had refocused certain efforts in the past. So we looked at all of across the department as a whole, as a group, to evaluate where we could prioritize funds for maintenance and operations and let these other things be discontinued and reallocate those resources. So it was really an internal DOT leadership effort.
Thanks.
I just had a comment as well, I suppose. I note that on this slide we show 10 currently filled positions, and in our budget subcommittee an hour ago we had some of those listed as pending. In other words, not vacant, not filled. It alarms me that we've gotten to a point in our budget process, we've gotten to a point in not being able to capture federal funds in the same way we have before. And I do want to highlight that we are working on that. To Representative Stutes' point, Naugus redistribution did go very well for our state. But we're cutting currently filled positions, and as Representative Stutes said, they're at sort of the highest level of the department. It just is concerning, and I guess I don't have a question there, but I just wanted to note that 10 of these positions up for cut are currently filled, whether we want to say they're pending or not. They have people working in them, so it's just a comment. Don't feel the need to respond. We can continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And at the time the budget was proposed, 10 were filled. Four of those are now vacated, and you are correct that the remainder are in or we are working with those staff members to find other positions and opportunities. Moving to slide 12. We're also, as part of our reorganization, looking to expand capital teams. You know, we discussed maybe disparities across the state through aligning with function. There's potential for disparities within a region. Northern region is the size of Texas. So we're looking to expand our capital teams and reposition our engineers and our designers with the communities they serve. As part of that, we have a budget request for $2.2 million of capital improvement projects and receipts from the sales of our buildings as we continue to optimize and have people closer to the work and communities they're serving.
For the record, Ryan Anderson, so this slide is really just implementation timeline, and it just goes through. We're in phase one and phase two, where we're beginning transition. We have team work sessions where we're working through details to make sure everybody, our team leadership has this opportunity where we all brainstorm on, okay, when we're making these changes in the budget, anything that falls out, that we want to make sure we care for. Talking about different ways of doing things. It's a pretty healthy discussion amongst all regions on how we, how we move forward here. Phase three will happen here this summer, which is when we start doing the formal alignments and positions transfers. And then phase four is really where we're set, and now we're just, stabilizing and making sure everything's working the way we were anticipating. And then phase five is just, we just keep going with the execution focus. We're always willing to, to admit if something's not going as well, and we, make changes based on that. I think that's always been our mantra. So definitely this is a work in progress as we go. But, this is the general implementation timeline.
We have a couple of questions. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioner, DOT, this has been one heck of a winter for you so far, and it's not over, and you guys have been incredibly busy. So, and I understand that, and I appreciate that. I just hope that in these transition, you're keeping the affected individuals apprised of the process, because I'm hearing from DOT employees who aren't being made aware of what's going on, and then they're surprised. At the end of the week, their job is done. And that, you got to have communication, because it just makes all the difference in the world in your workforce. And again, I say I appreciate how busy you've been, and I know it's a very difficult situation, but it's a pretty significant issue when you're talking about somebody and their employment. And nobody likes to get blindsided. So that would just be my comment. Thank you.
I have a bit of a queue going. Representative Mina, then Co-Chair Eichheit, then Rep. McCabe.
Thank you. Through the Co-Chair, my comment is, or question is similar to Rep. Stutes' sentiment for the Commissioner. Where in your implement timeline is there an ability for staff to provide feedback on the process, how it's going, and it's also how it's impacting your regular duties and operations in DOT?
Yeah, through Co-Chair, Representative Mina, if I could just to the next slide. And answer that question. We have a lot of feedback loops here we're working. We've done several. Right when the governor's budget came out, we do what's called a virtual all-staff meeting. When you're, overseeing 3,500 people, virtual is an opportunity. We get online. It's real time for everybody. There's a chat function where you can provide feedback in real time if you want. We also record those, and we make them available because we recognize a lot of our maintenance and operations folks, they don't work. They don't get to take the same time as everybody else to do that. So we're absolutely working on that. When it came to the position deletions, when the governor's budget came out, that day we contacted each person and we let them know, and we discussed with them how we're going to work with them to make sure that, their positions can be cared for. They'll be cared for as a person. They're part of our team. So we absolutely did that. You'll see we have an in-motion DOT electronic newsletter. All of you could go on there and you could watch what we've said as well. It's all on there. We created an action plan website because we recognized that there would be those folks. It's hard to reach out. We're such a big state. People are across the state. So we put our information on there as well. We've had several all-staff email messages where we reach out through email to everyone. And then we're doing these in-person work sessions and virtual work sessions as well to get more into the details of how we do things. So really we're trying to set this up. And you'll see at the bottom it doesn't look as pretty, the little screen on the bottom, but that's actually a person can go there and submit. You can get a link to it from the action plan site, but you can get to the survey link. You can submit your comments. It's anonymous. And so you can give us your feedback that way. So we have really tried to set this up so folks that want to reach out to us, they have these tools to do that.
Follow up. Thank you. Through the co-chair to Commissioner Anderson. Thank you for the next slide. I didn't look at that part. So when people are submitting their feedback and you're having all these different meetings, who is receiving that feedback and how do people know that their comments and concerns are being addressed? Essentially, who is the project manager of the transition?
Yeah, for communications, I mean, we use our communications team because we have an internal and external component to that. So really, it's those folks that make sure that all the information is getting to one place and that we all have the opportunity to go there and review it. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be reviewing it, but our team looks at these things for sure.
Thank you.
I have Co-Chair Eichheit next.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the Co-Chair, Commissioner Anderson, are there other states that have done a similar reorganization, and especially larger states with large rural areas that have done this in the past that we could look to see how that's gone? Yeah, they have removed regions from a large geographic area.
Yeah, through Co-Chair Carrick, Co-Chair Eichheit. Yeah, you know, Texas is a place you could look at. They're structured similar where, you know, capital is treated differently than maintenance and operations just because of the different nature. So they're more functional is what I would say. You will see they still have districts just like we're proposing. And that's the work happens in those geographic boundaries. And many, I think, like the state of Minnesota, will have their construction folks in districts, similar to their maintenance folks, just because they feel that the construction maintenance interface. But you'll find a lot of different flavors of this if you were to look around at different organizational structures. Our structure, where, you know, having one person that's overseeing both disciplines, I do believe is fairly unique if you look across the nation.
Representative McCabe and then Nelson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. So, Commissioner, 3,500 employees, how many of those employees are unionized? And how many unions?
Well, through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative McCabe, boy, we will get you the numbers on that for sure. But we have, yeah, I'm going to say we have three maritime unions. We have the local trade and crafts. We have the supervisory union. We have the general government union. We have the airport police and fire, which are another piece of it. You really have to go through all of our divisions, and there's a fair amount.
Follow up. Thanks. So having been involved in this before, and you mentioned it earlier, I think probably in the finance subcommittee, if a person's position becomes excess, typically in a collective bargaining agreement, they have bumping rights. They can go down depending on their seniority. And I'm quite certain that if you didn't follow that contract, and that's why it was written into the contract, that you would be in trouble, right? You'd have grievances and all that sort of thing. So my guess is you're following what the contract, the CBA, says that you're supposed to do when somebody's position is excess. So, you know, since you really don't work for us, you work for the governor, we're spending a lot of time worried about employee positions that maybe is better left to their union representation and their collective bargaining agreement. Would that be sort of a fair assessment?
Through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative McCabe. Yeah, those absolutely are cared for through the bargaining unit contracts. There's no doubt about that. I mean, our goal is least disruption as possible. So if we can find a way to care for someone before the position is deleted, you know, we're absolutely going to do that as well.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To follow up on that, since, you know, you listed the number of positions that we're talking about deleting, to follow up on the question that Rep. Stutes said, and I wish she was here, but she alluded to the fact, is that the process where folks are informed that their job is done at the end of the week?
Through Co-Chair Carrick, Representative Nelson, yeah, I mean, for this process, basically, it came out in the governor's budget, and the positions were shown as deleted, and of course, that would be effective July 1. And so that day when the budget came out, we called those folks and let them know that their positions were on that list and that, you know, we were going to be working with them to find them, you know, a good place in the department.
Yeah. Okay, so there's some time.
Yeah.
And then follow-up?
Follow-up.
My comment is that I appreciate, from what I'm understanding in this presentation, that the overall desire is a more direct and effective impact on the citizens by allowing people that are good at a particular task that they can focus on that particular task instead of being spread out. That's my comment. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
You're welcome.
I don't really want us to get into a huge debate here, but I just, for clarification, the 10 positions that we would be cutting under this consolidation proposal, how many of them are exempt non-union positions?
For the record, Don Pannone, there are 5 that are exempt non-union positions.
Okay. So I guess in response to Representative McCabe's earlier inquiry, that would largely be true across the department, but collective bargaining agreements don't actually apply in a lot of these specific positions.
So they're at will. Got it.
Just in terms of an appeal process, we like to get cheeky in this committee sometimes, I feel like.
You're welcome.
Commissioner, I think we've largely covered slide 14. I'd venture to guess we can move to slide 15, which I know begins the continuation of our discussion around advanced construction. I just want to look to the committee. Do we have additional questions on consolidation at this time? I don't see any, so Commissioner, please feel free to continue.
Okay, Co-Chair Carrick. I am going to call up Mr. Adam Moser to take my seat up here so you can have 2 of our financial wizards for this discussion on AC. I'm going to step away here from you. If that's okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for being in the hot seat once again, Commissioner. And we'll welcome Mr. Moser.
For the record, Don Pannone, on slide 15, we wanted to continue this presentation on this slide and restate what this slide was showing. So what this slide shows as far as advanced construction is the end-of-year amount that we had as a balance of authorized work under advanced construction. Those are the blue bars. So you'll see all the way back to 2004, we had roughly $175 million of projects authorized on advanced construction. And then the red line shows what that amount is as a ratio to our annual overall federal funding. So you can see in 2006 that the over $300 million in advanced construction authorizations balance was nearly double what our annual amount of federal funding was. So to pay that down, we would have had to have used almost an entire year's worth of federal funding. But it fluctuates over time, and federal funding amounts changes. Usually they go up over time. And so this just provides the context over 20 years.
Hello, yes. For the record, Adam Moser, Program Management Chief with the department. So this is just a summary slide of our federal authorization for a lot of the funding that we are able to use AC on. And here we have a list of The recent transportation funding bills, these are generally passed as five-year authorizations using that highway trust fund, and then more frequently, since I believe MAP 21, certainly the FAST Act and IIJA, using federal general funds as well to bolster the highway trust fund there. We are currently, of course, in the last year, federal fiscal year 26 of IIJA, or the bill, and the future funding for transportation, of course, is reliant on the federal government and Congress to take action on. No other questions there. We'll hold on. These are some of our major funding programs, formula funding programs that come to the state annually apportioned by US DOT and the Federal Aid Highway Administration. The National Highway Performance Program is the bulk of our funding under IIJA. That's been roughly $350 million annually coming to the state. That is also where the largest portion of our AC balances resides, or is on NHPP. As we look to convert those, one of those advantages of using AC early in a stage, and if we take something like the Cooper Landing bundle of projects, of course, those are very large obligations for construction phases. We would AC portions of that. That is programmed in our STIP. You can see that programming in there. If in the meantime, as years go by and we need to convert that advanced construction, we could potentially use a more appropriate fund source, such as specific bridge funding or other types of funding, and not use that NHPP. So that's one of these advantages of AC on these projects. Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, STBG, this is roughly about another $160 million under IIJA that comes to the state. Now, that is sub-allocated by population areas in the state. And so that is money that we have to spend, money that comes in for rural areas that is under communities under 5,000 people in those areas. And that is dedicated there by the federal government and says it has to reach those. Then there's population segment of 5,000 to 49,999, and then the 50,000 to 199,000 population group, and then over 200,000. That is, of course, just for the Anchorage, greater Anchorage area.
I have a really basic question on this slide. In our state operating budget, when we see federal funds as the fund source, do we ever see that breakdown? Do we have to ask for the breakdown for these specific fund sources within that? Or is that information we typically see on our end in the budget?
For the record, Don Pannone, to the co-chair Carrick, that's an excellent question. So we only see federal funds in the budget bills. This breakdown is something that DOT sees, where beyond just the federal authority, we have over 35 unique fund types in Fed highways, and then, you know, what, dozens more through Federal Transit Administration and our other federal partners. So, these funds can be seen in the STIP, all the fund uses as well, and what the eligibilities are, we also put in our STIP.
I guess as a follow-up, could DOT provide this committee just a general breakdown of what percentage of federal funds comes from each of these sources within the last year or so would be fine. But I'm just trying to get a sense of how much of our federal funding is highway safety improvement versus NHPP, et cetera.
Yes, that can certainly be provided. That information is generally provided in the STIP fiscal constraint tables, as well as we project out that annual revenue for each year. But we can certainly provide that to the committee. Maybe. For the record, Adam Moser.
Thank you. Maybe just a snapshot from this past year. I guess I'm just trying to get like a broad sense of it. I have another question. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Co-Chair Carrick. Not sure who, Mr. Pannone or Mr. Moser. Where does the MPO funding, that's STBG is where that resides, right?
Yes, through the Co-Chair Carrick to Representative McCabe. Yes, the Capital Construction funds for the MPOs is Surface Transportation Block Grant funding, STBG, and then dedicated funding, as I said, in those population sub-allocations. So the FAST Fairbanks Area MPO and the Mat-Su Valley MPO share a pot of funding that is split by a formula that we have worked out with the state and in concurrence with the MPOs.
Follow-up. Thanks. So suffice to say, or maybe I'm wrong, but when it was just FAST, there was more money for FAST, and now we are, since there's two MPOs, we're splitting money, or did the feds add money for us?
Yes. Through the chair, Carrick, to Representative McCabe, that the formula changed when Mat-Su Valley was determined to be an MPO and became an MPO. So money was shifted from other pots of population funding in STBG to increase the pot of funding for the 50 to 200K sub-allocation.
Thanks.
Please continue.
Yep. For the record, Adam Moser. The Highway Safety Improvement Program, that is roughly $60 million annually coming to the state before any transfers. And then we have the congestion mitigation and, of course, Highway Safety Improvement Program, that is very dedicated funding that has to be spent on projects that can statistically, in modeling, reduce accidents and improve safety on the roadways. So that is a very structured, engineered project assessment to pick those projects. The Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Improvement Program, or CMAC, this is funding that comes to improve air quality and reduce transportation-related emissions. It is only able to be used in those areas that have air quality nonconformity issues, so that is primarily the Fairbanks area and Anchorage as well. And even though, this is also in maintenance areas, so even though they may be outside of active non-attainment, they're still in maintenance areas for quite a long period of time, and that's what Anchorage still is able to use that funding for.
I think we have a question here from Representative Mina.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the co-chair, I was just talking with some folks on our MPO with AMATS, and I'd heard that they had requested CMAC money for the Downtown Transit Center, but they haven't heard a response, and they requested that about 3 months ago. Could we get an update on that?
Yes. Through Chair Carrick to Representative Mina, we can certainly try to find an update for you on that specifically. And if we know who, you know, how that request was submitted, we can look into that.
That'd be perfect. Thank you.
Yep.
Please continue. Sorry, I interrupted you in the middle of a slide twice. Now we'll try to get through this slide before we see if there's more questions.
Certainly. For the record, Adam Moser, continuing here. Other programs, National Highway Freight Program, this is dedicated to, of course, freight corridors. Those must be specified in our freight plan for the state. That is has an eight-year horizon, and it must be updated every 4 years. So only projects that are in that freight plan for Alaska can use this dedicated funding. And then the Metropolitan Planning funding here is roughly $3+ million annually. That is just to support the metropolitan planning organizations and their planning efforts, not the capital projects. Moving on. Oops, here. New funding programs under IIJA. One of those is the Carbon Reduction Program, and this can be used similar to CMAC, but in a broader geographical range to reduce transportation-related emissions of all kinds, primarily focused, of course, on that carbon reduction and greenhouse gases, but because you relate, when you reduce any type of transportation-related emissions, generally reducing the carbon as well. And that is also sub-allocated by population segments, the same that we under STBG. The PROTECT formula funding comes to us at roughly $18+ million annually to the state. That is not broken down into population sub-allocations. That must be used to enhance resiliency in a transportation project. So it cannot be used to just rebuild a part of the road if it was going to be rebuilt anyways. It would be used to raise the road, put in larger culverts, something to increase its resiliency over the lifetime of the project. Additional programs here at the federal level. That is the Tribal Transportation Program. We, the state of Alaska, the state DOT and PF, Department of Transportation, we do not receive these tribal transportation funds directly from the feds. They might be able to be transferred to us. That rarely occurs. But these are generally funds that the federal Tribal Transportation Program sends to tribal transportation programs in the state. The Federal Lands Transportation Program, this for Alaska is managed out of the Federal Aid Highways Western Federal Lands Office in Washington State. Several million dollars annually goes to that office. They do a call for projects. We, the department, have been most successful in partnering with those federal land management agencies to request project funding for projects that do improve service or access to those federal lands. And we cooperate with the Federal Lands Transportation Program on delivering some of their projects sometimes, and they will deliver some of our projects if it makes sense as well. The Railway Highway Crossing Program is really just another safety program. It comes to us in a flavor of safety funding, about $1.2 million a year, but that is dedicated specifically to projects that can reduce accidents on rail and highway crossings. Other discretionary pilot programs under IIJA, the Safe Streets and Roads for All program. This is largely tailored towards local governments, and of course, the Alaska Municipal League, who we do partner with to support local governments and their transportation needs, has been very successful in acquiring a lot of Safe Streets for All money for local communities in Alaska. The Rural Surface Transportation Grant Program, this is a large one under IIJA with billions of dollars going to it over the 5 years of IIJA. That has generally been put out there as a NOFO under the MPDG, or Multimodal Project Discretionary Grant Program, rolls in multiple federal grant programs, and then you apply for those projects, and it can hit all the pots of money at one time. And we have received some of those in the state as well. Reconnecting Communities Program is another program, and we've been successful in receiving some of that grant. These are all mostly discretionary grant programs under IIJA. The Wildlife Crossings Pilot Program, another one where we have been successful in bringing some of that money to the state for planning, especially along the Glen Highway and Moose accidents, to reduce those moose accidents there. And Reduction of Truck Emissions and Port Facilities Program is another example. Other federal funding that we receive, this is back to some more formula type funding, but coming from FTA, or the Federal Transit Administration, Section 5307. This is urbanized area formula funding that will go direct to those MPO areas and other urban areas in the state. 5311 funding is managed by the state and then issued out as grants to local communities. And then 5339 funding, bus and bus facilities programs for statewide usage. Other Federal Transit Administration competitive grant programs, the Low No Emission Vehicle Program, and the state local communities have been successful in receiving some of those grants. Capital investment grants supports major transportation capital projects for all types of transit, and passenger ferry grant programs, which the state has been quite successful in capturing some of those as well under the FTA's Rural Ferry Program. I guess key takeaway here, yes, advanced construction is a tool that we use for cash flow and timing. As you can see from a lot of these funding programs, they're very specialized and have specific eligibilities. AC can help us be more flexible with how we obligate large funds of money at one time and deal with cash flow.
Do we have questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Moser, for your presentation. I don't see any. And I think that concludes our discussion today. Thank you, Director Pannone and Mr. Moser, for bringing back this conversation on AC, as well as talking about the consolidation efforts the department is currently undergoing. Let me just check. For committee members' information, our next House Transportation Committee will be on Thursday, February 19th at 1:30 here in room 124. We have two bills on the calendar on Thursday. We'll be hearing a brief reintroduction of House Bill 217 on autonomous vehicles by the House Transportation Committee, and then also an introductory hearing on House Bill 305 from Representative St. Clair on vehicle titling. And with no further business to come before the Transportation Committee, we are adjourned at 2:47 p.m.